At the heart of the work that we do is what we call informed civil discourse. This idea that come to the table, but be informed about what you're talking about and keep things civil. And the umpires for that are really these councils that have been doing this for decades. They know how to frame these programs. But I think that it goes beyond that, just to our exposure to difference. There was a sociologist in the 1980s named Ray Oldenburg who talked about third places and how these third places in society are disappearing. Your first place is home, your second place is work, and your third place is essentially your cheers. These were the old plazas that you saw throughout Europe, right? These were the beauty salons or the bars or the coffee shops where people would gather. And we are, especially coming out of the pandemic, seeing the emergence of more of these shared spaces. But the rise of the suburbs, the rise of automobile culture, the rise of the internet and social media have all impacted our ability to connect in person, where we're actually bringing ourselves to the conversation. And so I think what councils do in a world where that is disappearing is holding that space and inviting people to come as they are with the experiences that they have to share, but to do it in a way that respects the other people in the space.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Matthew Hughes. He is CEO of the World Affairs Councils of America, or WACA. Matthew, welcome to the show.
So glad to be here, Joanna. Thank you.
Matthew, tell us about WACA.
The World Affairs Councils are all over the U.S. We have 90 councils in 43 states, helping their communities to understand what's going on around the world and how it connects to their local community. So these are apolitical, nonpartisan, educational organizations. And would you believe that some of them are actually over 100 years old at this point?
Oh my goodness. So Matthew, give me some perspective here. Like, give me an example of a member. It's a local World Affairs Council. It's a local nonprofit that's doing what?
You got it. So these are 501c3 nonprofit organizations who are bringing in journalists, professors, diplomats to their communities to put on lectures and panel discussions. Many of them have discussion groups like Great Decisions, if you've heard of that. They're bringing together different generations. They have students and working professionals and retirees. They're bringing together people across sectors, so bringing together businesses, universities, nonprofit organizations, community groups, and networks. It's really an incredible mix of organizations around the country. And the coolest part is that each one of them is so unique. They're really tailoring their work to their local communities. And then many of these organizations, many of these councils are putting on academic programs for high school students in particular.
Oh, so Matthew, you're an association of these councils. So are you also promoting these discussions about world issues and or focused on the members themselves? So tell me about the goals and the mission.
We're focused on supporting and strengthening the national network of councils. And so we're not as public-facing as the councils would be. If somebody from the general public were to come to us at the WACA National Office, we would point them back to a local council to get them involved there. But we also represent the national network externally with embassies and think tanks and universities. We work with government agencies and NGOs to help channel them into the council network.
Matthew, I'm going to ask you this question. We've got an election coming up, and we got a lot of stuff going on in the world. Why should Americans care about the rest of the world when we have so many problems here at home?
Oh my gosh. No, it's absolutely true. And we know that people don't vote primarily on foreign policy issues. We had councils who during the 2020 election were putting on programming about foreign policy issues in the 2020 election, but people are voting on pocketbook issues or people are voting on other things that they're seeing here at home. You're exactly right. It's sort of like we're in that movie. What was that movie that won the Oscar last year? Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Yes.
So that's the title of now, right? What we're seeing in Ukraine, Russia and Ukraine, what we're seeing with Israel and Gaza. This has sort of taken the oxygen out of the room for everything else that is happening around the world. But the impacts and the ripples are being felt right here at home. During the pandemic, I mean, the pandemic itself is an example of how interconnected the world is and how much we had to look at global solutions for what's going on. You can look at things like climate change and immigration, right, which are impacting communities around the country and indeed around the world. But you can look at the prices of items. Do you remember the toilet paper shortage of a few years ago?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Where things were caught in the Suez Canal and couldn't get out and you know, what all that meant. There's a lot going on in the world. And whether people have the bandwidth to pay attention to it or not, it does impact their daily lives.
So if I'm a grocery store cashier in Springfield, Illinois, why should I care?
The roots of what people are experiencing, a lot of it is local, but a lot of it comes back to global situations as well. Community cohesion is also something that we're focused on. It's not just international affairs and sort of the world out there. It's the world right here. And how do we, in this time of polarization, in this time where we've had so much isolation and separation, which is not just the pandemic, by the way, the pandemic was maybe a catalyst for some of this, but we're spending more time alone now than we have ever in human history in a lot of ways. We're hearing from the Surgeon General of the United States about a loneliness epidemic, right? And what does that mean? And the work of the councils and the work that responds to the people in these local communities like you're talking about is really about centering active listening and critical thinking and empathy and media literacy, which help to heal social fabric and bring people back together. It's also about, and the councils are incredible curators of these conversations, it's also about making sure that we are bringing voices to the table that have been historically excluded. Understanding it's not just the expert at the front of the room who knows everything about China and Taiwan, for example, or who knows everything about what's going on with NATO or what's going on with Venezuela right now. But there are people in the communities with lived experiences. And so it's really holding space and time for those deep dive conversations to happen.
Wow, amazing. Well, we're going to talk about Waka in greater detail in a second, but let's turn to you. How did you get to become CEO of the World Affairs Councils of America?
Oh my gosh, and this is just my favorite role. It really is, because I get to work with people all over the country and indeed all over the world with this work. We have a great growing team here in Washington, D.C. that's helping us to build out our support for the national network. But before this, before 1 year ago, when I moved to Washington, D.C. and assumed this role, I was actually the executive director of the International Relations Council in Kansas City. I was there for 6.5 years. That's our affiliate in Kansas City that's been around since the 1950s. The first speaker there, if you can believe it, was Eleanor Roosevelt in January of 1950.
Wow.
So these councils really bring together incredible, incredible experts and dinner table names, but also people who just have personal experience with what's going on around the world. So it was fabulous to get introduced to the network in that way. But I actually started my career as a K-12 teacher. I started teaching on the Mexican border in South Texas. I was there for a few years, moved to Kansas City and kept teaching. I wanted to have an impact that was bigger than the walls of the classroom. So I moved into the nonprofit sector, worked for People to People International, which you may have heard of before, an organization started by President Eisenhower in the 1950s about intercultural understanding and connecting people around the world. And really, the work of the councils and the work of this network brings together my love for international, my love for education, but also in the last few years, my love for associations. Who knew that associations were so interesting? Because there really is an association for everything. But I was a member of the Kansas City Society of Association Executives, KCSAE, developed a great professional community there, earned my CAE a few years ago, and have really enjoyed diving farther and farther into the association world.
Matthew, that's quite the journey, going from being an educator to a local association executive or nonprofit executive to now running an association. So what kind of mindset did you have to develop to go from being someone running a local World Affairs Council to someone running a network? Very different, because you're not providing the level of education and programming that you were doing at the local level.
You got it. And I think that part of that goes back to my time at People to People International Membership Association. That was the world headquarters in Kansas City. People have trouble believing that Kansas City would have the world headquarters for something like that, but it was a fabulous experience in so many ways. But you're exactly right. And there are aspects of that role, of that work, that I miss. I miss the engagement on the local level with students and working professionals and retirees and the different folks who would come to the programs. But there's something really gratifying about being able to figure out, and I think this is where my work as an educator comes in. There's something really gratifying about being able to provide systems and processes and resource sets to build out a national office team that can support the work of the councils in a meaningful way. Since I've been here, we've added a member services role, who actually is the first point of contact in the national office for councils to be able to help them do their work more effectively. And we're bringing on a brand new role, which is a national partnerships director, to help us to connect externally with those different partner organizations and external stakeholders that we relate to and funnel them into the national network. So there's something really nice and gratifying in developing those systems.
Wow, super exciting. Let's actually turn to Waka. So talk to us about this new person who's going to be focusing on partnerships. Who are these partners and why are they important?
Oh my goodness, they're essential, because at the end of the day, these councils are curators. They're holding space for community. They're bringing people together. But the councils themselves are not the experts. They may have some expertise in their communities. But in our work as apolitical, nonpartisan educational organizations, it really is important to be bringing in people who know what's going on around the world. It can be a little overwhelming, though. The world is a big place. The world is a complicated place. And to be able to bring experts in and talk about what's going on in a way that's accessible to the layperson who is maybe interested but doesn't know a whole lot of background. You know, if you remember a couple years ago during the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the councils were having trouble talking about other parts of the world because the news was focused entirely on Ukraine. One of the things that we say in the council network is we sort of keep the pilot light on for these other parts of the world that have maybe fallen out of the news cycle. What's happening in Argentina? What's happening in Yemen? What's happening in Sudan? What's happening in Somalia? You know, there are so many parts of the world that deserve to be looked at and deserve to be understood. And so we've got these sort of educationally hungry folks at the local level who want to learn. And so one of the ways that we can help them is by channeling these experts from so many different fields, so many different sectors and types of work to the local councils, so that they can explore what's going on around the world.
So what you're doing is you're really introducing the local councils to this partner network so that it's a larger network or community of people having these conversations, and they can source speakers and experts.
Exactly. So the State Department, for example, is eager to get out to councils, but I can't tell you the number of councils who don't realize that they can actually host a State Department speaker in their local community. Publishing houses are eager to get authors out to communities, right? But the councils may not be aware. Half of the councils in our network are all volunteer. So they may not have the capacity or the bandwidth to be able to realize some of these opportunities that really could enrich their programming and, as a result, the impact that they're having in their communities.
So let's talk about these councils that are all volunteer driven. They are probably people who want to have these conversations about what's happening in the world, but they also then have a responsibility to run a local nonprofit. So how do you support them so that they're thriving local World Affairs Councils with good programming that are sustainable?
Joanna, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what we're trying to focus on. And we're very fortunate that there's a lot of good literature, a lot of good research, a lot of great resources out there talking about how to run a nonprofit organization effectively, how to focus on fundraising, for example, how to develop an effective board or focus on succession planning for an organization. So a lot of that on our part is really curating those resources so the councils know that they exist. There are grant databases that you can go to and look at grant opportunities that are only applicable in San Francisco or in Miami. You know, those are things that we wouldn't necessarily pull at the national level, but we can point our councils to them, which is really helpful.
Matthew, you've got something called orientation or a new orientation that helps these local council leaders become better leaders and have high performing organizations. So what's that?
Yeah, so we really leaned into our name on this one, and we call it WACA 101.
Ah.
And associations will know the challenge of dealing with acronyms. But WACA 101 is a quarterly orientation for new board and staff members in the council network to help them understand what the national network is, the different resources we have available for them, the different ways that they can plug in through national level programming that we have. We have a national conference every year in Washington, D.C. We have an academic competition for high school students that we put on every spring. We also have a program that we host in conjunction with a local council. This year, for example, we'll be in Dallas-Fort Worth. Next year, we'll be in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where that council really gets to shine in how it's putting on its local programming and also sharing the expertise of local nonprofit and association experts, international affairs experts in their community to inspire the council network to go back home and do their work more effectively.
Wow, love that. You just gave me a mouthful about all the things that you're doing. So let's dive into these things one by one. You have a national conference. It's in November, so you just had it. What was it like? How was attendance? And what's the membership saying?
You know, it's really interesting because this conference has been going on for decades, right? And when it started back in the 90s, the association, by the way, WACA as such, only started in the 1980s. So compared to the length of time that our councils have been around, some of them have been around since the 1920s, we're relatively new as the National Association. But we've really settled in to sort of what the purpose of this national conference is. It's meant to inspire these councils to take what they're learning, to go back home and to put it to use in their work as local councils. So much of the value that comes out of the national conference is councils getting the chance to connect with one another in person, to understand that they're all unique organizations, but they share so much in common, whether that's values, shared challenges. And I can't even begin to tell you during the pandemic, the value of that connectedness. The entire model of council programming for years has been in-person programs.
Right.
You can imagine at local libraries or auditoriums of some sort, and to overnight have to go online to figure out how Zoom works for council programming was a massive lift for councils. And so to be able to bring the council leaders together to figure out how they're going to solve shared challenges, I think is really valuable. We're also able to work with different partner organizations in DC to present speakers and different themes and topics that councils might not otherwise have considered. Now, in addition to the all-volunteer councils, we have some councils that have between 15 and 20 staff members.
Oh my God.
So some of these councils really do have the bandwidth or the capacity to be able to find these opportunities. But for many of the councils, the ability to pull together different authors and experts and think tank individuals and so on is really valuable for the work that they're doing on a daily basis.
Matthew, I think my association exec listeners are going to be eager to know, how was attendance and was it all in person?
So attendance was all in person and it was up this year. And we're trending up for this year as well. One of the most important things that we've been able to do is extend the planning and therefore marketing runway for the national programming that we're doing. And so we already, as a matter of fact, have our theme this year already for the November conference, which we're excited about. That's the earliest in my recollection the theme has been ready and that we're able to start bringing together speakers and figuring out the schedule and so on. That makes a difference as we're trying to plan this national level programming, because then we can mention, not only do the official marketing channels, but we can do the, oh, by the way, marketing that happens as we're engaging with member councils throughout the course of the year. It really helps us, I think, to have that all ready to go.
Wow. Matthew, you also mentioned a signature program and you called it the Academic World Quest. Tell us about that. This looks really interesting from what I read on the website.
What's most interesting, I think, about this program is it's something that came out of a council about 20 plus years ago. The council in Charlotte developed this program locally, and then we were able to figure out how it operates on a national level. And so councils around the country, we have about 40 councils around the country who each year put on a local academic competition for high school students. Think about like a Scholar Bowl or a Quiz Bowl type event. There's a study guide. There are 10 different rounds. And then the winning team from each of those competitions comes to DC in the springtime when the cherry blossoms are out. It's a beautiful time to be here. And they get to show off their global knowledge on a national stage. So while they're here, they're connecting with, again, those embassies and think tanks. They're thinking through what opportunities after high school look like for them. As a former educator, I can tell you that's one of the biggest challenges for students is lack of exposure to opportunities. If we can get to them early enough and show them that these opportunities are out there, it really can impact their path in life. And I know that's what so many of your association listeners are thinking about, is not just the strength and health of the association world today, but really what is the future? What is the pipeline for the future of the association world? And in my opinion, that comes out of educational programming for high school and university students.
Matthew, I think few people know that when I was in high school, I used to go to the San Francisco World Affairs Council pretty regularly. I went to a week-long conference at Asilomar, and it was so defining for me. So I'm super excited that this programming for high school students is continuing to really have an impact on these students.
Absolutely. And there's so much more that we can be doing as well. We're working on building out a suite of global education programming that can benefit students at different levels in different ways, working with teachers, working with communities that are supporting educators. One of the biggest challenges we've seen in the last few years is just how stretched educators are. Teaching has always been a difficult profession, but especially in the last few years with the demands that are being placed on teachers, it's become even more difficult to find ways to get them engaged in global education. And so we're working on creative ways that we can help to resolve some of that and make these opportunities more accessible to more students.
Matthew, the space of nonprofits covering world affairs, at least here in DC, is quite crowded. So how are you funded and how are you standing out?
Yeah, well, and this is one of the ways that we're really fortunate, I think. So we are this national association or national federation. So councils are paying dues in every year. But we were very fortunate a couple years ago to be in receipt of a large endowed gift. And so that has actually been able to go to support the capacity building that we're doing at the national office. I really have to express sincere gratitude to the donor of that gift, as well as all of the people in the WACA sphere who made that possible, including my predecessor, who worked so hard to make that possible. What that has done is given us the opportunity to expand in meaningful ways that can support and strengthen the national network. And there are other opportunities that are out there. I think bringing on this partnerships person that we were talking about earlier is going to help us to identify more grant funding that can be shared with councils. We have a number of historical examples in the WACA network of partner organizations who have been able to fund different speaking engagements and different opportunities around the country for councils who might not otherwise be able to put those on. So it really is a matter of expanding that capacity so we can expand the reach of the programming that we're doing.
Matthew, I got a question for you that I'm pretty curious about, and that is, I feel like the world, our country in particular, is getting more polarized, and we talk about the echo chamber that each of us lives in, right, where Facebook gives us just the stuff that it thinks we're going to agree with and care about. But what your councils are trying to do is really have conversations that are apolitical and wide-ranging. So how do your members have these conversations that represent multiple voices in a way that doesn't, I guess, devolve into a shouting match or a fist fight?
At the heart of the work that we do is what we call informed civil discourse. This idea that come to the table, but be informed about what you're talking about and keep things civil. And the umpires for that are really these councils that have been doing this for decades. They know how to frame these programs. But I think that it goes beyond that, just to our exposure to difference. There was a sociologist in the 1980s named Ray Oldenburg who talked about third places and how these third places in society are disappearing. Your first place is home, your second place is work, and your third place is essentially your cheers.
Ah.
These were the old plazas that you saw throughout Europe, right? These were the beauty salons or the bars or the coffee shops where people would gather. And we are, especially coming out of the pandemic, seeing the emergence of more of these shared spaces. But the rise of the suburbs, the rise of automobile culture, the rise of the internet and social media have all impacted our ability to connect in person where we're actually bringing ourselves to the conversation. And so I think what councils do in a world where that is disappearing, and we shouldn't, by the way, hesitate to note the decline of organized religion in the U.S. Religious institutions have played a significant role in this space for years. And so I think that part of what councils do, an important part, is holding that space and inviting people to come as they are with the experiences that they have to share, but to do it in a way that respects the other people in the space. And so we talk a lot with the councils about what it means to have core values, about what it means to bring together people who may not agree with each other all the time. How do you set guidelines and parameters for what those conversations can look like? And how do you measure success? I think that's a really hard part of the work that we do, because we're not digging clean water drinking wells. We're not solving women's health issues. We're not working on putting books in classrooms where there are really measurable outputs and impact statements. It's really a lot more about heart and mind work, which is the antidote to the polarization and other malaises that you're talking about, but it's really challenging to measure.
You've got something called roundtables. And I think they contribute to this, right? So how do they work?
That's right. So roundtables are something that we've introduced in the last year. The idea is to bring people together from different councils to connect them on different functional roles of the councils. So we have roundtables for marketing communications, on fundraising, on global education, public programming. These have been surprisingly well attended. Council leaders and board members are taking time out of their day to attend because they find the value in it. We've also introduced a new program that we do occasionally that we call Council Huddles. And these focus on more difficult to digest issues that councils are dealing with. We did one in the fall talking about Israel and Gaza. We did one just recently talking about politics and polarization and how councils can actually thread the needle of these really tricky topics at a time where people can't see eye to eye. So we're doing what we can to provide opportunities for councils to connect, to share what their experiences have been, and to solve shared challenges together.
So Matthew, you said it yourself. You said that you can't count the number of wells that your councils have dug, that it's a hearts and mind issue. So how do you know you're making a difference?
We use some proxies for that. So we look at things like attendance. I will say that some of the metrics of that have had to shift over the course of the pandemic in particular. You know, Zoom fatigue is very real. And one of the things that the council saw during the course of the pandemic was a decline in live attendees on a Zoom webinar or Zoom meeting. But it's not because people weren't interested. It's because we were all exhausted. And we remember very well what that meant. So we're looking at other things now. What are the number of views on a YouTube video, for example, in the month after it was posted? We have councils that do podcasts. And so what are the download rates of the podcasts or the subscription rates, things like that? I think councils are also looking at sort of the breadth of their engagement. So as you can appreciate, historically, there was a very particular type of individual who had the luxury of time to be able to come to council programming. Now that's shifted and councils are very focused on what does it mean to bring together a diverse audience that's actually representative of the communities that they're serving. And by the way, the folks who have prime international engagement within their communities, what does it mean to engage immigrant and refugee populations in a council program, for example? What does it mean to engage international students or students who have recently returned from study abroad? So I think that they're also looking at the broadening of their engagement and what that means for the benefit of everyone who's involved in council programming.
Matthew, I am so grateful that there are local World Affairs Councils and AWACA to help us have these amazing and informed discussions within our community. So thank you for being on the podcast and thank you for the work that you're doing.
Joanna, it's really a treat for me. And the more we can get people engaged in these issues, the more difference I think it makes in the long run with not just what's going on in the world today and sort of peace at home, but really broader peace where we can connect people across boundaries and across different perspectives.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends. Bye!